It's time.
He really moved the ball around today. That was a lot of fun to watch.
For Seattle's best baseball analyst, Mike Blowers.
The 1-1 pitch to Blowers. Swung on and belted deep to center field. To the track. The wall. Fly away.
With Wyman and Bob.
We look forward to talking to him each and every week during the baseball season. He's the best in the business, and he is with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He is Mike Blowers. Hello, Mike.
Good to talk to you guys. How you doing?
We're great.
Happy birthday, man.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
How about that? Is your phone blowing up with texts and calls and everything?
Oh, yeah. I've had a lot of it today. But it's been great. It's been fun to hear from people. I actually haven't heard from them in a while. And, of course, you know, my kids get in the middle of it, too. So it's been fun.
Now, do you tell people how?
And I have my wife with me on the road trip. So it's been
nice. Oh, good. Yeah, there you go. So what are you going to go out and celebrate tonight or just like every other day?
Yeah, pretty much like every other day.
Mike, when you get this old, like myself, I just had my 20th anniversary of my 40th birthday that Mike or Bob just coined it that way. But, yeah, you get to this age, it's not so much a celebration. It's, you know, it seems like it's more of just like relief.
It's an achievement.
Yeah.
It's an achievement. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, no, we're not. No, Nicole's, I'm going to have dinner with her right after I'm done talking to you guys. And then, you know, just watch the ball game, do our thing, and go back and get some sleep because we got a day game tomorrow.
I feel like I met her the one time up there in the press box last season when she was with you. And, you know, you'd had the accident, you know, things weren't going great. And she was kind of cracking on you. She seems like the type that'll keep you humble. I think she was making fun of your golf game or something at the time.
You definitely know who's in charge of our family. That's for sure.
It's like, wow, no mercy. The guy's battling
back. I feel your pain, man. I feel your pain.
Well, Mike, you know, outside of your birthday being the biggest news of the day, the second biggest news would be the Mariners are just rolling in. We'll get to Julio and everything that's gone on there, but this pitching staff, Mike, is pitching the way I think we all expected them to be out of the gates. And you had some hit and miss with each of the guys. They took turns kind of, you know, putting a dud up there. But you look at them, and this came from Mariners PR. In the last 11 games, Mariners starters have allowed two or fewer runs in every game. They've got a 1.30 ERA, 70 strikeouts, 13 walks. I mean, this rotation, even Kirby with a sore arm who couldn't go six to give you the quality start, still shut out the opposition. It's just, it's been amazing to watch what the starters and the bullpen have been able to do.
That's the strength of this club. And I know it didn't start out that way, but Bryce Miller has been good. Logan Gilbert has done his thing. And now the other guys are falling in line, too, with what you expect. And I'm looking forward to watching Bryce throw tonight. He's been exceptional. And, you know, we'll see where it goes from here. But this is the strength. And the one thing I would say about it is they've also cleaned up some of their defense because the defense goes right along with it. And these guys, although they can strike people out, they're going to put the ball in play and you have to make plays behind them. They certainly have started to do that.
There's been lots of talk about Bryce Miller's splitter. Tell us exactly, you know, what's going on with that pitch. Why is it so difficult to hit and, you know, how those guys mastered that, Mike?
Yeah, I think for Bryce, it was basically because last year he struggled against left-handed hitters and he needed something off of what his usual pitches are, and basically because he has a fastball that has a spin rate on it that it carries through the zone. So he's a 95, 96 guy, but it looks like it's getting on you quicker than that. But the lefties were starting to time him up, and so he needed that split. And when it comes out of his hand, it looks like a fastball, and by the time they recognize it, it's 10 miles an hour slower. And he gets really good depth to it. I've been really surprised at how well that's worked here early in the season. I thought maybe it'd be something more that he would work on and maybe get a hold of that thing by the All-Star break. But he's been throwing it great. And it's a really good weapon against left-handed hitting, and that's what he needed.
As far as the win last night goes, Mike, how much carryover, how much relief? How about that? How much relief do you think there is? I mean, this team last season, they were 0 for Arlington. They were 0 for 6. This is the team that's in front of them in their division. It's a rival. They won the World Series last year. Just to get that win out of the way, do you think we saw the relief Julio showed after the home run? Do you think there was some small sense of relief with the team? Like, all right, first game, we got it done. We got our win. Is there anything to that, do you think?
I think it goes all the way to one of the last things you pointed to, and they're very aware that these guys are in the division and that they won the World Series last year. And I think for the Mariners, with the way they talk and the way they carry themselves, they have a lot of confidence in what they're doing. And I think they get an opportunity to play the guys that were in the World Series last year and won it. They were here to see Mitch Garver get his ring last night. I think that is what the difference is for. And they got to prove to themselves that they can play with these guys and beat them. And they certainly had a good start last night.
I feel like now that Julio cracked the seal, there's going to maybe be unrealistic expectations for him. But tell us what, you know, what that does for, you know, it's been a long time since he hit a home run. And, you know, just kind of that accomplishment right there. Is that something that you notice as a player that, like, okay, man, now I got the recipe for this? Or what's that feeling like for him, do you think?
I think it's probably, Dave, a little bit different than when I was playing. Everybody knew he's going to hit home runs this year. He's too good a player not to. But when it takes 22 games to get there, that starts to get on your mind. And you know, look, especially in today's world, these guys hear everything. They see everything. They know what's going on, what people are talking about. And I think more than anything, there's just some relief there that, okay, I got that out of the way. They can't talk about it anymore, and we'll just move forward from here. But he's been hitting the ball extremely hard. And now he's starting to hit it in the air. And when he hits it in the air, good things happen. And that certainly was the case last night.
When you talk, and we've heard Scott say that, you know, he's got to get the ball up in the air. Is that a mental approach? Is that a mechanical approach? He's got to tweak his swing a bit. How do you, you know, he makes it sound simple. Like, yeah, just hit the ball in the air. How do you change it that quickly?
Oh, I wish it was that easy. No, I think there's some mechanical things. When Julio was coming up through the minor leagues, the scouting report on him was that he hit the ball hard, but he hit the ball on the line and on the ground a lot. And I think that they've been tweaking that since he's been at the big league level. And obviously last year he really caught fire when he hit all those home runs in August. Was a terrific month for him. So I think it's just a minor tweak. And then to me it comes down to pitch selection. And he's starting to tighten things up a little bit. And, you know, Bob, you kind of get into one of those things where he's starting to get his hits so he can relax a little bit more. And I think that frees you up. The game starts to slow down. And then, you know, you can hit a pitch like he did last night, 435 feet, that goes up into the second deck. And then you start to get on a roll that way. But you got to get started somewhere. And a lot of these guys, even if you're, you know, you're going through like Polanco, you know, his average isn't where anybody wants it, but he's walking a lot and he's getting on base. I think that's the start. Then maybe the next thing that comes is him starting to get his hits, and then he'll start driving the ball out of the ballpark too. But there's a process involved, and it's different for everybody. And, you know, to be honest, it's different every year, just kind of depending on where you're at and what your health is and what you've been working on over the winter. So, and then, you know, these guys, they're the best players in the world, but it doesn't mean that they don't press at times when things aren't quite going the way that they want to, and you have to work your way through that too.
Hey, Mike, Kel, Raleigh, really, you know, especially the last couple of weeks, you know, I think he was below 200, and I know this time of year it's easy to affect those average numbers, but just what he brings to the team other than clutch hitting and things like that, just his leadership, he seems even more confident, and he always seemed confident to me, but just what he means to the pitching staff and how valuable he is.
He's tremendous for the entire team. You know, he's to the point now where Scott even moved him up. He was hitting third last night because he wanted to try to get him an extra at-bat if he could. He's not going to be in the lineup tonight, so I'm guessing he'll play in the day game tomorrow. But he means a ton to this entire team, and he takes charge of the pitching staff. The one thing that those guys know, and these guys, you know, they get into all the metrics and everything that they're doing, and Cal is right there with them. He makes sure that his studying is done. He's prepared. And when he goes out to the mound and talks to you, he has a real good idea of what he's looking at and what he's seeing. You know, you mentioned George Kirby the other day, and he didn't have his best stuff with him. And so Cal had to really work to get him through that outing, and George trusts him with that. So then, you throw the power in there on the bat, and, you know, being a switch hitter, they're fortunate to have him, I can tell you that. He's grown so much in such a short period of time, and right now he's being required to handle a really good pitching staff.
You know, when I retired from the NFL, there was no way I was going to be a coach. I just knew too much and the hours that they put in and everything. I would say for a guy like, and I could always tell who the guys were that were going to be into coaching, but there's no way Cal's not a manager at some point, right? I mean, 15, 20 years?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he's obviously going to have a long playing career, but when that day comes, I would not be surprised if that's something that he wants to do and will do.
Hey, as far as third base goes, Mike, what's your? I was looking at, you know, Rojas has been pretty steady. He's at the bottom of the lineup. He's not doing a ton of damage in terms of home runs, driving runs in, but he's been consistently hitting the ball. Made a tremendous defensive play last night. Do you think they'd be better served just like, all right, yeah, we know we went into the season with the idea of a platoon with him and Urias, but I feel like why not just let him. Throw him out there every day. See what he does. If the numbers start to diminish, the play diminishes. All right, but I don't know. Would you argue against him being your everyday guy at least for now?
I think for me right now, you have to let the thing play out. This is what you were committed to when you went into spring training. You have a couple of guys over there and a lefty righty. platoon situation, basically. And I think you have to give it more time and let it play out. And eventually those things seem to work themselves out. Arias is off to a little bit of a slower start. If he doesn't get it going, then maybe do something like that. But right now, I think it's important also for Rojas to keep his confidence up. And just, I think right now with where they're at, I think they're going to let that play out for a while before they make any changes there.
Mike, I think I ask you this every year, but I'll ask it for this particular group of guys. The bullpen, just, you know, what they what they've been able to accomplish, and just what I think Divish called it the laboratory. But what is it that you think that that they've really got down? That, you know, whether it's bringing in the right guys or just telling the guys, hey, pitch what you pitch, you know, throw your best stuff. What do you think is sort of the secret there?
They buy in. I think what happens is almost just the opposite of that, Dave, in that the Mariners and all the guys that they have on this road trip and on every trip and are at home, and they study all this stuff, and they go to those pitchers and say, look, you've been throwing your slider, you know, at 30%. That's your best pitch. We'd like to see you get that closer to 50%. You know, your fastball, it needs to be pitched at the top of the zone. Just all the different things that these guys, but what they do is they break each individual guy down and what their strength is, and typically they come in the game and they're basically using two pitches. And then the last thing is you better fill up the strike zone. That's the one thing that they preach all the time, and don't be afraid. Just get after it. And these guys buy into it. And I think that, you know, the organization has done a tremendous job with those guys out there because, you know, Brash is hurt. Santos hasn't been available. They bring up a couple more guys, and, you know, they make them fit in. And Scott's not afraid to use them, and they get after it. So, you know, I think it's a combination of things. But you got to give the guys in the techie side of this thing a lot of credit with what they do to the pitching staff.
What do you see different out of Luis Castillo in his last start? Because that was the one I think everybody was counting on and hoping for. And he just, you know, first three starts, I should say, of his season, he gave up four runs in each game. Then he had the quality start where he was better, but he wasn't dominant. It was six innings, three runs. This was what we all have come to know and love from him in that last start. He shuts out the opponent, seven innings. He looks spectacular. What was the difference as far as you saw it?
Yeah, I wasn't sure what we were going to get out of him, you know, because it was really cold. It was snowing out there with him on the mound. He didn't let that affect him. I thought the one thing that I really liked about it was his fastball command and his fastball command at the top of the zone, because he was just ripping the heater right by those guys, which opens things up for his slider. His changeup was okay, but his fastball and the slider, which is what he basically stayed with in that game, were both excellent pitches for him. But I was just amazed that when you see that the tracer on TV, he was constantly on that top line and then elevate from there and get him to chase out of the zone. So I think, you know, he's on his way. And it was funny talking to Scott about it, and he just said, you know what, he was sick of looking at 0-for-4, and there was no way he was going to lose this game tonight. And he obviously pitched really, really well, and I think he'll pitch well again tomorrow, too. It looks to me like he's got it locked in now.
When you look around the rest of the American League, Mike, you know, and I know a lot of these teams we haven't played yet, but, and this is the first division series here, but who do you see in the American League? Which team do you think is well put together, well constructed, and has a chance to make a run, other than the Mariners, obviously?
Yeah, I'm a little bit curious about Houston. We're not used to seeing them struggle, and they've had some injuries too, but I always just keep an eye on those guys and where they're at. They always seem to get things worked out. The Rangers, obviously, you have to give them all the credit in the world for winning the World Series last year. They have some injuries to their rotation. Those guys are going to be back. It sounds like more of the All-Star break, and you start to get those kind of arms in the rotation with the way they can swing it. They're going to be awfully tough also, so it's important for the Mariners to continue to play well and get out in front, but as far as the West goes, I think those are the three teams, and the Mariners certainly belong in that conversation.
Something we talked about yesterday with our guy John Morosi, and I'm curious, just as you're a guy that's experienced this level of play, watching what Shohei Ohtani does with all of the, first of all, you sign a massive contract. We see guys that do that. They go to a new team, they sign a new deal, and then they struggle because they're pressing. They're trying to live up to that number. Then you throw in the whole controversy with his interpreter and all of that going on, yet this is a guy who seems blissfully unaware or just wildly unaffected, whatever you want to say. He's out there just mashing the ball. He hit a home run, hardest of his career, 118.7 miles per hour last night. It just, the ability to sort of tune everything out and I guess clear your mind as a baseball player of that profile with that much attention. How impressive is that for you as somebody who's done it?
Yeah, it's very impressive. And I, you know, when you're talking about him, the one thing that comes to mind, and obviously, you know, he's off to a great start to his career. He's got a ton of talent and ability. But I think, you know, those guys that are like that can be really, you know, single-minded on what they're doing. They can just be zoned in all the time. You know, we had the opportunity to watch Ichiro play for a long time, and that's exactly the way that he was, too. He was just tremendous at that. But Ohtani, you know what? We'll see what happens with his arm and if he comes back and pitches again. But he's just a super athlete, and I think that not everybody can do what you're talking about, Bob. It can be really difficult at times, but he's also been around. You know, he played over in Japan for a while, too, so it's not like he's, you know, a guy that's in his second year or something like that. So he's experienced quite a bit. And I know from playing over in Japan, somebody like him, like Ichiro was, too, those guys are like the biggest celebrities over there. So they've had to deal with a lot before even getting here.
The afternoon show, Bump and Stacy, they talked about, Mike, today a little bit about, you know, what's it like now compared to like in the 90s, you know, when you played in, is it better? And the one thing I would say is, and my question to you is that, was there a team that you really hated, you know, that you know, or you had friends on? I mean, everybody knows each other now, I feel like. And so it kind of takes that, you know, that part of the rivalry out of it. But was there, because for me, it was the Raiders, Oakland right. Raiders, hated them, hated playing. Right. You know, I hated the guys, but now everybody knows each other. But did you have a team like that when you were playing that you really enjoyed beating?
Yeah, I we were kind of forced into it, to be honest with you, but it would have to be the Yankees. One, I broke in with them. They're the ones that got me to the big leagues for the first time. Things didn't go particularly well for me there. Jay Buhner was another one, and coming to Seattle was great. But the biggest one was Lou. Lou hated to lose to those guys. And Lou always felt like, you know, regardless of who you are, he'd always play you against your former team because he felt like there was this extra edge to it. I don't know if that's the case, but I think because of the way Lou went about his business, especially in New York, he'd be chirping from the dugout, which wasn't like him much, but he'd be screaming at the Yankee players and all kinds of stuff was going on. So we had no choice but to buy into it if you wanted to be a part of his team. But that was a pretty good, and the Yankees were really good then too. So
yeah,
you know, it was a lot of fun to go in there and play.
I love watching the videos of Lou. We were just talking about it because Boone got thrown out of a game for something a fan was screaming, apparently. But when you start going and looking at some of those highlights, maybe the best all time as far as you know, throwing a temper tantrum out on the field.
Oh yeah, when he had enough, you know, he wasn't coming out there to have a conversation. He was going to get thrown out. There's no question about it. But, you know, the thing about it is that that's how badly he wanted to win. And I don't care if it was in April or September that he felt that way. He'd get like that in some spring training games. He'd just get all fired up, which is, as a player, you know, he can get in your face, too, and you just better be able to handle it. And I love playing for him. I think all of us did that there. But he'd also have times where, you know, he'd have to move some guys along because they just couldn't take it. Just too much pressure. But he always felt like the pressure that he applied on us in April, May, and June would make us stronger and better when we got into September. And I was fortunate enough to play on a couple of playoff teams for him.
Were you on the team when he was at the infamous hat kicking out there? He kept kicking his hat, or were you elsewhere at that point?
Yeah, I don't think I was there for that one. I've seen him kick his hat plenty of times.
There's the one where they're all laughing. They cut to the bench, and you see Junior and everybody laughing.
I know which one you're talking about. I've seen so many of them, I can't remember if I was there for that one or not.
Would it be hard not to laugh? I mean, would you guys look at each other just like, all right, don't let them see us laughing. We got to hold this back. I mean, that would be impossible to fight laughing, seeing him just absolutely explode out there.
One of the funniest things ever was he was in the dugout. We were on the road somewhere, and something happened, and he threw his hat down on the ground in the dugout, and he went to kick it, and he ended up falling down. And we're all just sitting there. I mean, he's like, he's literally at my feet. He's on his back, and all of a sudden he sits up, and he goes, "It's okay. You can laugh at it. That was funny." And he got up and walked back over there. He calmed him right down. So, yeah, he's a beauty. I loved it.
It's okay. He's on his back at your feet. What a visual.
That's okay. Oh, you can laugh. Oh, that's good, man. Yeah. That to me is, I guess it's so entertaining to me just because they turn into little children, right? Like they're throwing temper tantrums out there. And yeah, it looks like Aaron Boone is, I like some of his antics, but I don't know. Maybe he goes too far, but I don't know if that's entertaining to you or not, Mike. But I just think it's interesting that, you know, a grown man turns into basically a small child. And I love it. I love it.
I think it's great.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like we're missing that these days. I mean, the days of, you know, Lou and Earl Weaver and Billy Martin, you know, kicking dirt on the ump shoes and kicking dirt on the plate and all that.
I agree. But, I mean, for the managers, it's just like with Scott tonight. There's going to be 2, 3, 4 plays tonight where he's not sure or doesn't know, or he thinks he sees something, but he's not sure, and he turns right around over his shoulder, and they have the guys that are down there, and they tell him, yes, go review it, or no, we're not going to challenge that. Back in the day, they were just convinced that they had it right, and they would go out and argue about it, especially if it happened a couple of times in the game, and they just don't have the opportunity to really do that in today's world.
Did those moments have impacts on you guys as players? Did you get more fired up, like, all right, let's go, or did you just look at it as comedy relief?
Well, obviously it was entertaining, and sometimes it was funny, and sometimes it was very serious, and you had to take it that way. So it just kind of depending on what the screaming and yelling was about. I think for myself, it's one of those things that back then, you know, the managers would get into it more with the umpires and stuff, and it just lets you know as a player that they're into it and that the winning is important and they're willing to fight for you, you know. But like I said, today's game, they don't really get the opportunity as often as they used to.
Yeah, it's just I miss that element. It's so great to see those highlights. But, Mike, as always, we appreciate it. Great stuff. Happy birthday to you, my friend. I hope it's an awesome day. You and your wife have a tremendous dinner and a good time out there. And hopefully we're talking about a series win in Texas. That'd be awesome.
That sounds great. Good talking to you guys. Thank you very much.
Happy birthday, Mike.
Thank you.
There you go. There's Mike Blowers with us each and every week. If you tuned in the middle of that, didn't catch it all, it will be on the podcast page after the show at SeattleSports.com. Coming up, we mentioned it, talking to Mike. Shohei Ohtani is on his way to making even more history. We'll talk about that, plus some other stories around the world of baseball. Coming your way next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Our thanks once again to Mike Blowers, who joined us in the previous segment. In case you guys missed that, that conversation available for you on the podcast page after the show at SeattleSports.com. Just click the podcast tab, click on our picture. It'll be right there waiting for you. Click subscribe. That's the drill. Click subscribe, and you never have to think about it again. It's beautiful. But we brought this up in our conversation with Mike. Shohei Ohtani hit the hardest home run of his career, 118.7 miles per hour. It was, did you see the highlight of it, Dave?
Yes, I did.
It was a laser.
Laser.
It was a laser. Just crushed it. And you look at where he ranks just going into action today. Still early in the season. I know people love hearing that. But he's first in batting average in all of baseball. He's first in hits. He's first in doubles. He's first in slugging. He's first in OPS. The size of the contract, the expectations that came with that, playing in the second biggest media market in the country. And I know he played with the Angels before, but nobody is paying attention to the Angels the way they are the Dodgers. Yeah, it's California, I get it. But the spotlight, the expectations, it's not even in the same hemisphere.
Well, and I think, don't you think that indicates, you know, there's been people that have speculated that he was the one that was gambling and, yeah, you know, this guy took a fall for him and everything. Seems to me like a guy who has a clear conscience, right? I mean,
either that or he's so
locked in.
Yeah, just so I don't even know what the word is, so mentally strong that, yeah, these things, even if he were guilty of it, which I think is absolutely nonsense that the feds were going to somehow cover for him, but that's another story. Yeah, I mean, for him to be this unaffected by the contract, the spotlight, the expectations, and then you throw in that whole bit of controversy around him, I mean, if you're a Dodger fan, if you're Dodger management, you're going, we're getting what we paid for, and he hasn't even pitched yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
You forget about that side of
totally forget about it.
That other side of his game there that you'll see presumably next season, but as just your hitter, as just a new bat you brought to the lineup, he's ridiculous.
You know, I saw a breakdown of his swing the other day. I think it was D. Rowe on MLB Central. But, you know, he was talking about if you watch his hips. Now, he's already a huge dude, right? And he's a big, strong guy. But your hips, your power source, you know, that's what we always call it. That's when, you know, I just remember this. I was a 195-pound shot putter, you know, mm-hmm, and I could flip my hips really quickly, and that's where all your power comes from. And you see how it's almost like a ripple effect, you know, where he starts with his hips, and then the rest of his body just snaps too, and it's just incredible to watch. Like, it's just like the perfect swing. It's just, and where does that rank as far as, like, pretty swings? You look at the left-handers usually.
It's always a lefty. Yeah. Very, very few right-handers you go, that's a good-looking swing. I mean, they're fine, but they're aesthetically, it's always a lefty. You know who had a great right-handed swing? It was Dan Wilson.
Mm.
Really good-looking swing. Not saying he's the same level hitter, but he just visually, aesthetically.
Now, are you sure that that's not because you think that he's pretty much up there with Cliff Averill as far as
he's one of the great people I've met. But no, he just had a really good-looking swing. When you see him just even in the on-deck circle taking cuts and his swing at the plate, good-looking right-handed swing.
Yeah.
Yeah, right-handers, it's not... A-Rod's had a pretty good-looking swing for a right-hander. But, yeah, it's all like Griffey, beautiful. It's just poetry.
Maybe it's just particularly fascinating to people who are right-handed.
No, it's always. I think even lefties agree. Most people agree. They look at it and go, yeah, that is a good-looking swing. And, yeah, he's just got so much power, though. It is just – he's a big dude, and you see it. I mean, that thing was a missile. So – We'll see what he ends up being, man, but he's...
Yeah, but, I mean, getting back to your point, like, he's playing really well. I mean, if he had all of that stuff going on and there was something nefarious going on his side, that or, like you said, he's, like, the most mentally tough dude ever, but...
Because how many people do we see in any sport that sort of buckle initially under the pressure of... Just signed this ridiculous contract. I'm on a new team. I'm trying to fit in. I mean, we're talking about guys trying to fit in here. You know, Garver and Polanco and Rayleigh, and they haven't found it yet. And this isn't a knock on them, but you assume that eventually they're going to get there. They're going to get their rhythm, find their level of comfort. But even guys that don't have anything close to that level of spotlight or notoriety struggle going to a new environment. He's switching leagues. He's going to the National League. So he's facing guys on a more common basis he didn't face, certainly in the American League. And we'll see if he's able to pull a Frank Robinson and winning MVP in each league. You know, it's the only guy that's done that. So we'll see. Other things quickly that were going on in baseball. Mike Trout hit leadoff for the first time since 2020, hit a leadoff home run. First time hitting a leadoff home run since September 28th of 2012. So he looks healthy. Looks like he's Mike Trout again. The average isn't where you expect it to be with him, but he's got 9 home runs. He's tied for the league lead in home runs right now. So I think with Ozuna, maybe. I'll have to look. But, yeah.
Remember there was a long time there where Mike Trout was never in any kind of, like, ads or commercials or anything like that. And then I think it was him and Andrew Luck that did one together.
Subway?
I thought it was a drink.
He was doing Subway for a while.
Yeah.
He could have been doing that, too.
Oh, Body Armor? The one where they're dancing?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're doing, like, a disco? Yeah.
Was that some kind of sports beverage or something? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and he is super easy to like. Has Mike Trout ever gotten the wrong side of you? I don't think.
Didn't we get mad at, didn't he respond poorly to a ball that was thrown up and in on him, or he got plonked?
Yes, and that was what led to the next day.
The fight. Yeah.
Right.
Did he get hit or they just buzzed the tower?
No, he buzzed his tower. But, I mean, look, they were trying to throw him. Like, that was his one weak spot is up and in. And so that's all the pitcher was doing. I don't even know if it was a ball.
No, I think it was I'm trying to remember the whole all the details. But I thought it was one of those situations where it made zero sense because of where the score of the game and runners on base. And, like,
you wouldn't put it made
no baseball sense to think they're trying to hit you. I think he said something after. That's the only time, to answer your question, is the only time I went, you know what? Bleep you, Mike.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was disappointed. Like, no, you're not this guy. Come on. Don't be that guy.
I think it was Eric Swanson that maybe buzzed his tower, but
somebody will text
and
him.
Then
somebody,
you know,
will have it.
What happened as a result of that was Adam Ray with his horrible Mike Trout imitation, where he sounded like French or something.
He sounds like Kermit the Frog.
Yeah,
hey guys, Mike Trout here.
It's just like, what is his voice? He's doing things. He's doing Mike Trout things again. He's starting to look like that guy who had been dealing with injuries over the past couple of years. This one we talked about in take two, and that's Blake Snell being placed on the 15-day IL. And it's been a struggle for him, you know, since he signed. He was hanging around out there for, seemed like forever. Where is he going to sign? Which team? Everybody thought it was going to be the Yankees. Ends up with the Giants. But he's on the 15-day injured list with the left adductor strain, retroactive to April 23rd. So he's been struggling before that. You know, he's, he's 0-3 with an 11.57 ERA, 197 whip, and 11 2/3 innings. So he has not been good. And that's what people speculated. Yeah, I remember reading about him, when he finally did sign. They were talking about getting him into the rotation almost right out of the gate. And people saying, that's a mistake. This guy hasn't been competing. Yeah, maybe he's training, but he hasn't been competing. And it looks like they were right, at least initially. And I'm not rooting against him by any stretch. I was hoping the Mariners, like a lot of people, would maybe, jump into the mix, maybe get him at a reduced price. And he's made it clear he'd like to pitch here. But, coming off a Cy Young Award season, and now he's struggled out of the gate and now on the IL.
Dr. Lefko was right. Adductor strain is somewhere in the thigh/groin area.
Nice. I pull those all the time. That's why.
Your adductor?
Yeah. What, running up the stairs?
Yeah, I'm adducting all over the place.
When you and Matt are driving home.
It's stomping down on the pedal to try to get around Matt. Just strain that adductor muscle.
You say you pull those. Is there more than one? Is there like one on each side?
I was reading, trying to figure out. I think there's like three different ones that go from the thigh to the hip and groin. They have weird names and all that
stuff.
I have
four.
So you have four. Sorry. Okay.
It's a little bit better than everybody else. Actually, that would just be more things to pull.
Yeah, it'd be more injuries.
It feels like what you were saying, that, those injuries didn't exist back when you played.
Right.
Like, that's a new thing, right?
Yeah.
Those didn't exist back then.
Yeah, I didn't have those kind of muscles. There was no
adductor. It is funny to hear different injuries these days going, wait, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
Because back in your day, it was a bad shoulder, bad hip, bad knee, whatever. You talked about low bleeps and all that stuff.
Yeah, I didn't have low bleeps. Yeah, well, and it's funny, baseball's probably the one that explains it the most, and then you got hockey on the other side where it's this would be a lower body injury here. And then I feel like with baseball, even more than football, they get into the details. Like adductor, you never hear that in the NFL. You got a groin pull.
I don't know. There's so much in there that nobody knew before. They just would chalk it up to, I got a bad hip. Pulled my groin or something like that. All right, coming up, there is a potential worst-case scenario for the Seahawks in the first round. We'll take a look at that in our What If Wednesday. Playing the hypothetical next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
What?
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 It's time for What If Wednesday.
Coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We'd have been state champions, no doubt.
Wyman and Bob rewrite the scripts of major moves and moments in sports every Wednesday afternoon. Now step into an alternative reality with Wyman and Bob.
It is time for What If Wednesday, presented by Mazda of Everett. A reminder coming up at 4 o'clock, we turn you over to the Mariners pregame show, game number 2 of their series against the Texas Rangers as they get game number 1 in the books and take that one. Hopefully they take 2, win the series. Tremendous road trip at that point we're talking about, Dave.
Yeah, don't text me.
Okay, I won't.
I'm going to watch it later.
Okay, do you got more power washing to do?
No, I got other things to do.
Okay.
You're replanting things.
You're going to go honky-tonking?
No, honky-tonking.
Okay.
But, I do have to do the lawn, so.
I got you.
I'm going to be recording it, so I don't want any texts from either of you clowns.
Can I text you, Dave? I was going to say, you opened yourself up to that.
Oh, yeah, Matt's where I go to get information on sports.
Matt would watch the game just to ruin it for you.
He absolutely would.
Yeah, he would.
I don't have cable. I don't have whatever streaming service they're on, but I will find a way to text you every play. Oh, that was a strike. Oh, a ball. Two balls. Two balls and a strike.
I'll share my Fubo account info with you for tonight, Matt, and for this purpose.
Matt would be like, can you believe that hit by Julio? Amazing.
So great. The way he hit it with the bat, it was stellar.
Hit it with the bat. I have no problem just turning my phone off. Text away, Matt.
Yeah, we won't ruin it for you. But we play the hypothetical here, the What If Wednesday question is, what if the Seahawks don't have first-round grades on any of the O-linemen that are left when they pick at 16? So let's say Fautanu's off the board, and we don't even know how they feel about him. We assume they like him, but maybe they don't. Who knows? Alt is going to be gone by everybody's estimation. Maybe the rest of the O-linemen they look at, they go, he's not 16. We can't pay this guy first-round money. We got him graded as a third-rounder, second-rounder. Is that a move you think they go? Because this would fly in the face of two things. First of all, they say best player, period. Doesn't matter the position. It's the best player. So maybe it wouldn't have an impact. Or Maybe they feel like, hey, we really wanted this. We wanted Fautanu. He's off the board now. Do they have a second best player that they would take there at 16? Or do they go, you know what? This is where we probably look to trade back.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, man. If for the second time in 3 years you have a spot, you pick a tackle, you know, because you got Charles Cross with the 9th pick. And that was, I believe, the trade coming over from Denver. For Russ.
Was that part of that?
Yeah, absolutely. That whole, I think, you know, Ken Walker, or was it Boye Mafe, was the other one. But, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him because you have Abraham Lucas. There's kind of a question mark. And normally I wouldn't say, we were just talking about depth and looking at, you know, some of the positions. You got 3 to play 2 there, I think, because you have Abraham Lucas and then I'm blanking on the super tall guy.
But, Stone Forsythe. Forsythe.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Forsythe.
I think you like him a lot more than I do.
Yeah.
I feel like he's a serviceable depth guy.
He's got really, really good feet. His hands, you know, are okay. But
what's Ray said about it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. But I don't care what Ray thinks. I'm kidding. No, we get Ray in here every once in a while and talk O-line. But, you know, he does more than that, certainly. But, yeah, I don't know. I've just always liked his feet and the way that he – so, yeah, maybe that's the case. But, no, if you get 2 first-rounders at tackles, I mean, that's a pretty good deal. I mean, I think a lot of teams would like to be in that position. The 9th pick, 2 years later, the 16th pick, and you get a guy like Fautanu, and, you know, maybe you don't move him inside, but it sure would be nice to have him because he can play both, and apparently they're just interchangeable. Now, I think, speaking of Ray Roberts, he would kind of maybe not like that as much because he always talks about having a PhD at a certain position. And
right. I like that, too.
I agree with him. I agree with him.
As much as we're both in agreement, I don't know how realistic that is anymore, though. It feels like everybody, like one of the selling points of these guys when they come out or you're seeing the draft preview, this guy's multifaceted. He can play inside. He can play outside. You know, he can play anywhere on the line. It's like, okay, but where does he specialize?
Yeah.
Where does he dominate? That's where I want him at.
Yeah, I would say Fautanu, I mean, what he specializes in is dominating opponents. So, you know, I showed you that the little spin move that he had, which
looks like a defensive pass rusher.
Yeah, it was a spin move. It's not the most sound thing, but what it indicates is that this guy's just a good football player. He knows how to get to the right point. So, yeah, I mean, I think that would probably set this team up, and especially if you get Fautanu, who apparently can play guard, and, you know, maybe you make him your tackle, but the guy's just incredibly gifted.
Well, this comes up a little bit because Daniel Jeremiah on the NFL Network talked about the way he's hearing it, there could be an early run on offensive tackles.
I also know there's teams that want to move up in this draft, and I think they're moving up for tackles, to be honest with you, and that is New Orleans is one of those teams that wants to move up. The Colts are a team that's talked about moving up. The Philadelphia Eagles are a team that's talked about moving up.
So if the run on quarterbacks you're talking about happens, and that occupies 5, 6 of the first picks in front of the Seahawks, and then there's a run on tackles, Seahawks could be sitting in a really profitable spot.
Yeah, I hope so, because I honestly, Bob, I think that all 6 quarterbacks are going to go before we get there.
Really?
I think there's going to be a panic. I mean, look, Bo Nix is probably the one who has been ranked by the mock drafters the lowest, right?
Which I find odd, just looking at his numbers compared to the others, and I'd be curious to see why is he so much further out of the picture. We talk about Penix, who is in the picture now but was out for a long time.
Yeah, Bo Nix, 470 attempts and 3 interceptions.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is ridiculous. So that's what I think is going to happen. And then, you know, like you said, then there's a run on offensive tackles. And, you know, here's another crazy, you know, going into the draft, we'll be out there at the VMAC tomorrow. But I think Rome Odunze is going to be the first receiver taken.
Really? So every mock, just about everyone has Marvin Harrison Jr. going 4 to the Cardinals.
Yep. And then Malik Nabers, one of them that I'm looking at, they have Malik Nabers out of LSU, wide receiver. They have him going at number 8. And then they have Odunze at 9. But I don't know. And then, you know, then you look at the other one. The other one is defensive end. You look at Jared Verse. Now I see he's cracked into the top 10 when, you know, all the, but look, these guys are just trying to cover all their bases and everything.
Yeah.
You know who I pay the least attention to? And the one I haven't even, I'll be honest, I'm going to look at him tonight, but I have not even looked at him. Drake May.
Yeah.
No.
There's no conversation about him.
There isn't. There's None. Nothing. And, you know, it's not like, like, what's good, what's bad. Yeah, it's, let's do this. It's the claw. 30 seconds.
Yeah, there's all only right. slightly more conversation about Jaden Daniels. Those two are just kind of like,
no, you're right.
They're there, and that's fine. That's how it's going to go. All right, that does it for us. I want to thank our guest today, the birthday boy, Mike Blowers, who joined us on the program. You can find that conversation on the podcast page at seattlesports.com. You got the Mariners and the Texas Rangers coming up game two. We will be taking you wall-to-wall coverage tomorrow from the VMAC with the NFL draft. It's Wyman and Bob.